Hello and welcome back to the preview show, or the year in review as it is now. I am delighted to be joined tonight by Sepp Kuss of Team Jumbo Visma. Sepp, how are you?
I'm good, David. How are you? Thanks for having me on the show.
I'm very good. Thanks for asking. I've had a severe dose of man flu over the last couple of days, but
oh man,
I'm now fighting strong.
Me too, actually. I went to a restaurant the other day and I think I had a few too many snails. And and then the next 2 days I was hurting a little bit.
The joys of the off season.
Yeah.
Where are you tonight in the world?
I'm at home in Soldeo, Andorra.
Cool. Have you got Girona and Andorra as two places?
Just Andorra. Every now and then we go to my girlfriend's parents' place in Barcelona, but no, so far the weather's holding out, a bit snowy and cold the last few days, but it's still nice being in the mountains in the fall.
Do you stay up high, or are you one of the guys that stays lower?
Yeah, I'm up high-ish, like 1800 meters, so it's a bit fresh in the mornings.
Just like Scotland.
Exactly.
Okay, so we're going to take a look back at your season. Focusing in on some pretty epic wins. Well, one epic win in particular. First and foremost, think back to the start of the year. How did your winter training go?
Oh, the winter training was pretty good. No setbacks. Normally, I go back to the U.S. for a few months in the winter. But this past winter I was just in mostly in Barcelona, actually. So, that was the first time I didn't have to deal with a bunch of snow and everything like that I normally have in Colorado. So, it was a good winter for me.
So you came into UAE tour feeling quite good. Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty good. I wasn't too sure how I'd feel in the first race, but aside from the first stage with the missing the splits in the crosswinds along with a lot of other guys, the summit finishes, I felt surprisingly good. So for me it was a nice start. It was actually a perfect race to start the season with.
I watched it back last couple of days just to remind myself.
Yeah.
You've got this brilliant moment when you go with Yates on the first mountaintop finish and you follow. And then I think for you, as a fan watching it, you can never predict when you're going to blow.
Yeah.
Your face always looks the same. So you're following Yates and then all of a sudden, no, this is not happening.
See you later. Yeah.
Well, I suppose as a novice, what does that feel like when the legs just say no?
I don't know. I think it depends on the person, because some guys are really good at knowing or are really careful with crossing their limit. And sometimes for myself I think, okay, yeah, this moment I need to go over, and sometimes I pay for it, other times I don't. But it's just kind of you're underwater a bit, just kind of hard to describe.
On your computer, what do you have on the display? Do you have what? I know some people just have, I know one guy who just has speed, that's it, nothing else. What do you put on your display?
In a climb, I always have the Garmin has like a climb profile page. So I always like to know exactly how many K are left in the climb, what kind of sections are coming up. There's also power, but I never really look at the power during the race.
Yeah. What I love about you, and I think many fans love, so you've tried to follow Yates and Pogacar, which we love to see. It didn't work out for you. And then almost instinctively, your first reaction was to look backwards, see where Chris Harper was, because for those who don't remember, Chris Harper made the split in the first day.
Yeah. So
high on GC. Chris is a good climber as well. And then it's that thought of, right, where's Chris? you're on the radio instantly, and then you go straight back and you help Chris kind of limit his losses. Is that an instinctive thing?
A little bit. I mean, I think for me in that stage in particular, it was more exciting for me to just really try for the win and go for that. And if not, then help Chris, which I was happy to do. You know, I'd rather help him and be nowhere in the results than be whatever third or fourth, and you know, not a memorable result. So yeah, I was happy to help him out.
That's pretty cool. And the team ended the race on a high. Jonas won the final kind of mountain stage. So it was a good start for you and a good start for the team. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Really good start. It was a nice group we had there. Some younger guys. We had Jost there. He's always funny to have around. And it was a good start. Pretty relaxed race.
Then you head to Catalonia. So almost a kind of home race, I suppose, in some ways. And we find you again following Adam Yates up a big steep climb. By that point, were you getting fed up of Adam Yates?
Yeah, I mean, I think in that one, I was able to follow his first move, and I felt pretty good. It was us and Valverde. And then there was kind of a moment of hesitation, and I went. And I severely underestimated Yates, and he covered me immediately and then went over the top of me, and there was nothing I could do. So in hindsight, probably should have just waited and just tried to hold on to Yates as long as I could have, but definitely got burned pretty hard on that stage. And then I think in the mountain stage after that, I was bit cautious, maybe too cautious, because I also felt quite good. But then I just waited so long, and then I'm not going to do anything in the sprint, and then nothing really happened. So that one went a bit both ways.
Is it hard to get that right? You know, you go in the first day, you go with Yates and Valverde. In memory, you sat on them a little bit, and then you jumped, and then obviously you've possibly overreacted the next day or the next mountain stage by being a bit too conservative. You know, fans watch it and they're thinking, oh, just attack, you know, do this, do that. In that moment when you are riding up a hill like this, how hard is it to get those tactical plays correct in your head?
Yeah, sometimes it just goes with your legs. You know, if you have really good legs, you can, everything comes a bit easier and everything slows down a bit. So you can be a bit more calculated. And if you're on the limit, but you think, oh, I need to do something or not. And then you're just kind of, you're either there or you do something that you don't need to do, whether that's attacking or not. But, I think it depends. Some guys are really good at knowing the moment, and you know, that's something I can also work on, just reading those finals a bit better and knowing how far I need to make it if I do make a move.
Because Chavez, his move was quite far out that day, and I think most people watching didn't expect it to succeed, because it was quite far out. Ineos still had a number of riders left. And then that's just the way it goes sometimes, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. And I mean, he was the strongest on that climb for sure. Just to hold off however many Ineos guys were chasing and to go from a ways out, it was really, really strong ride.
Then we head off to Romandy, and we have a pretty horrific Queen stage up Thion 2000 in snow. Very cold temperatures. You know, it was a very, very demanding day out. What do you remember of that tough day?
Yeah. Oh, it was, I think the only sun we had was in the prologue, so it didn't really matter so much. But I think on paper, I was looking forward to the Queen stage. And then yeah, every day before, I kept refreshing the weather app, kept refreshing and thinking, oh shit, it's going to be so cold and so rainy. And maybe then I had already, defeated myself a bit, but I just completely died in the cold in that one. Just couldn't even, couldn't pedal.
Now, we've spoken previously about this season looking to try and take some of those leadership opportunities. So you went to Catalonia as leader. You got two still decent results in the mountain stages. Romandy didn't quite work out. How did you enjoy those races purely from a kind of leadership role, that extra responsibility? Did you enjoy that?
Yeah, I did. I think, the nice thing was that I had the opportunity, but it wasn't, the plan for the race wasn't built around me necessarily. It was just for me to focus every day and give it a try. And for me, it was something where I never felt any pressure, and I actually really enjoyed it. It was just, in the end, it was on me to make the result or, seal the deal, whatever, in the final day of those races. And in some races it went better than others, but it was a great opportunity.
And then Dauphiné, you looked in really good form. The first day Padoon won, you and him were away. I think it surprised everybody that he put in this pretty exceptional performance over the rest of the couple of days. Leaving the Dauphiné, where were you at legs wise? Were you, spot on for the tour? Did it feel like that?
Actually, I think that was my worst point was after that race. The last stage, I had no legs. I was totally empty already from the start. And then I remember the next few days in training in Tignes, it was fine. And then once we started to really do proper training, I just couldn't, I was still just so tired, so fatigued from whatever. So then I took another 3-4 days, just easy to kind of recoup a little bit, and then got going again. But yeah, it wasn't the best feeling going into the tour, not really on, not how I felt before any grand tour before.
And how hard is that mentally? Do you almost try and kid yourself on that it'll be okay, it'll come, or do you go in worried?
I think I wasn't too stressed because I knew, the first stages were going to be so hectic anyways that, I didn't want to put too much pressure on myself either way to say, oh, you got to, make it through these, because I wasn't the GC guy. I knew anyways that my help would be most needed later on in the race. So I figured if I just really recovered well before the race, and then hopefully I would feel better later on.
So then you go in, all focus on Primoz, trying to win his first yellow jersey. Big crash early on, he loses time, recovers quite well in the time trial, but it kind of looks like, it's going to be hard for him, and then he eventually has to quit the race. From a kind of morale point of view, how hard was that kind of night, the next day on the team, when everything is focused on Primoz and he's got to quit the race through injury? How hard was it?
Yeah, it was pretty hard. I think, when you have a guy that's really, really on for that race, and he made all the sacrifices before, he didn't race before just to be all in for the tour. So that was, it was hard just to see for him, because it was, he put a lot of energy into it, as well as the staff and the team and everything. But I think we still had a really strong team, and we could already start to see Jonas how well he was riding. So, we still had a lot of options, but it was a matter of just kind of figuring out what to do next and where to go from there.
Who's the guy that keeps the spirits up around the dinner table? Who's the guy in the team that pulls everybody together?
Let's see. I think usually it's, well, normally it's Primoz, actually. He's pretty, you know, he's just a funny guy around the table, and, you know, everything's easygoing. But, yeah, I think, you know, Mike is always pretty lighthearted. Yeah, I think in general, the group is, you know, everybody has their different personalities. Some guys are more quiet. But it was, yeah, pretty good atmosphere all the way through.
I don't know if you kind of read it or saw it. The team received quite a lot of criticism in the first couple of weeks for not totally just riding for Jonas after that point. So obviously yourself, Stevie, Wout were allowed to chase breakaways and stuff like that. Did you see that criticism? What did you think of it?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit. I think, you know, he deserved the help, but he, you know, we also knew that Pogačar was just on a completely different level. And, you know, for Jonas and for us, it was also a goal to help him onto the podium, but it's a bit different team support than if you're already in the yellow jersey, for example, or if you're super close to the win, for example. But you know, we didn't need to take too much initiative at that point. You know, I think there were some stages, like the stage in Andorra. There were three of us in the break, or was it four? I can't remember. But anyways, three. And I thought, oh shit, there's there's not many guys left back there. It's probably Twitter and everything is probably on fire right now. But yeah, I think also with Jonas, he's pretty relaxed, and you know, if everyone's there and you make the plan, oh, you need to do this and this and this, and then we're gonna pull and you're gonna win, then it's also a different kind of pressure for him in his first tour.
Yeah, because I read that he was quite happy with the approach you mentioned there, having a full team supporting you 100% for that one goal adds a different dimension of pressure to your shoulders. And that's something maybe you spoke earlier about when you had leadership opportunities, the idea of it not being such a big pressure moment.
Yeah.
So the team, I mean, your coaches are very good. You know, they clearly know what they're doing. So on reflection, once you reach the end of the tour and Jonas is second overall and you've got a stage and Wout's got, what was it, three stages, it seems like the team made the right call.
Yeah, I think so. You know, in I think on one side, if we didn't win those stages, then it would be okay. Well, what are we really doing there? But you know, even that stage in Andorra, it was always communicating like, okay, who feels the best, who is gonna go for it, and are you sure you can go for it? And then, you know, so you can do both strategies, but yeah, I think in the end, a lot of it happens internally, and you have to weigh out everybody's personality and how they want to do the race.
So we get to Andorra, your home stage. So we don't often get the situation where it's Tour de France, it finishes in your hometown, you're in a position where you can chase the breakaway. It's a nailed on 100% breakaway wins stage.
Yeah.
So everything has lined up perfectly for you to have a go at that, winning the tour stage at home. How, I was going to use the word desperate, that's probably the wrong word, but you wanted to go in the breakaway, you wanted to win that stage. How did you play the start of the stage? Because I've watched it back, and for the first 10 kilometers, I didn't see you at all near the front of the race. And then all of a sudden, you're at the front, and within 4 kilometers, the brake's gone and you're in it. So that early part, talk me through. What was your strategy to try and get in the brake?
Yeah, well, I definitely wanted to be in it at first. but I didn't want to spend too much energy to get in there either. But actually in the first 5K, Steven was up in a group of, I don't know, maybe 15. And then a few minutes later, my radio just stopped working completely. And I was with Wout. And then there were a bunch of Ineos guys jumping across. So I thought, okay, well, Steven's in the break. I'm just only going to follow these Ineos guys because we don't want a bunch of Ineos in the break. So I thought I was just at the front of the of the peloton. And then we go down this crazy descent that lasted forever. And I kept looking back. I think, oh, well, the peloton must have just broke, but we're still at the front of the peloton. And then we bridge across to the group that Steven was originally in. And I look back and I think, oh shit, well, I guess this is a, this is a breakaway.
It was very weird. It was all of a sudden, I think it was Quickstep and Ineos. It was quite a narrow bit of road and they just blocked it. And the guys in your group weren't even going that hard.
And
all of a sudden, the brake's gone.
Yeah, it was weird. It was just such a nasty descent, you know, a lot of melting pavement and super tricky, not even really high speed. I think it just, you know, and it really narrows. So I think when a few teams would close the road there, then that was it.
So then the gap goes up. As I said, everybody knew it was going to be a breakaway stage, but this is a proper Tour de France breakaway. This is Wout van Aert, Julian Alaphilippe, Alejandro Valverde, Vincenzo Nibali, Nairo Quintana, Mike Woods. You know, it was full of the best of the best riders in the bunch. You mentioned earlier about communicating throughout the stage because you had Steven and you had Wout. When was the call made that we were going to ride for you?
I think before we got to the Embolira, we just kind of talked amongst ourselves and, you know, Steven didn't feel super good that day. So he already said he'd be the first one to wait for Jonas. And then, I think Wout said he was going to wait on the Betcholise and just try and get over Embolira. And then we would try with me for the stage. But it was kind of a hard one to read because it was so much headwind that day. And it was hard to say if you had good legs or not, because you're either in the draft completely not pedaling or you're in a full block headwind. So you either feel really easy or, you know, those sticky wind legs. So, you know, if they asked me if I felt good, I said, well, I really don't know. Cause yeah.
And then Wout, I think Wout drove the descent, didn't he? I think Quintana attacked over the top. And then Wout drives the descent. You get down into Andorra. You hit this climb. I can't remember the figures exactly. What, like 6K, 8-point-something%. Very, very steep. And initially, it's tactics. Nobody's really wanting to push. You know, at that point, did you formulate a plan? Or was it just, I'm going to follow and just wait?
I didn't form too much of a plan. I knew for sure I was just going to follow in the beginning because it was so steep that, you know, you don't lose too much by just following immediately. But I was a bit surprised that some of the guys attacked so early because it's pretty hard in the beginning, but then it has a little descent and then another steep part. And then it really goes steep for a few K. So, but some guys just went straight from the bottom. And of course, everybody else is going to follow. So I could stay more or less hidden there. And then when, you know, Gadou and whoever else went, then I knew, okay, these are more or less the guys I need to look at. And from there, I knew it was more or less a few Ks of the hardest section where I would probably be able to, get the biggest gap I could and then just try and hold on for the faster sections. But
you said there, you're not sure. the legs earlier on in the stage. So when Gaudu goes, I think it was yourself and Valverde responded. Was there a point there that you thought, hang on a minute, yeah, the legs are good?
Yeah. Actually, I think in the first K or so, I was, you know, following and we were going fast and I thought, okay, it's good. And I looked down and said, oh shit, I'm still in the big ring. I've never done this climb in the big ring before. So I thought, well, that's pretty good then. So then I switched down to the small ring, spin a little bit. And then, but I just felt super. I don't know what it was, but just one of those days.
And then the move, you go to the front, wasn't like a full attack, but you move to the front, Valverde's with you. And then all of a sudden, Valverde, in classic Valverde style, pulls the pin when he knows he's just going too much. You see him doing it many times. Great
management.
And then you have a little look, and then you're out the saddle, and you're right, okay, let's go.
Yeah. I knew then that, you know, I went all in, but I knew that he also knows how to measure his effort pretty well. So when the gap was pretty good already after a K, I thought, all right, I've put in a lot and maybe he's done a bit less and he's going to measure his effort out and catch me over the top. So that was, I think that was the only stress I had in the stage was in the last K of the climb when I was really suffering. I knew, okay, he's definitely paced this better than I have. And maybe he just comes full tilt in the last K and catches me on the crest. And then, yeah, but I knew if I had, you know, 10, 15 seconds at least over the top, then it would be okay. So
watching it on TV, the gaps on TV were wrong. Soon after you dropped them, it went to like 30, 40 seconds. And then almost it kind of came back down and settled at the real gap, which was always kind of about 20 to 25. At any point, did the message come through in your ear that it was 40 seconds?
Yeah, at one point it did. And then, at one point I remember that, oh, it's 40 seconds, Sep, you're going to win. And there was still like 3 or 4K left in the climb. I thought, well, I don't know about that. That doesn't make me feel any better because now if I don't win, then...
And then when it goes to 20, did you think, oh, shit?
Yeah. Well, then when it to 20 and I was already really, really suffering, I thought, oh, fuck, I just got to, you know, it's not going to be pretty, but I need to get over the top of this climb and just hang on for dear life. But it's nice to hear the gaps, but other times when it's so variable, it's not nice.
And your girlfriend and her family were on the climb, is that right?
Yeah, they were in the last, I want to say 2K.
So you got to see them solo?
Yeah, before the stage, my girlfriend put the pin of where they were going to be standing and so I had more or less of an idea of where they were. And that was a really nice moment. So I still had some composure at that point when I when I went in front of them. But then after that, it was tongue out for the rest of the way.
Yeah, she planned it well because the final K of the climb, you were swinging a bit, weren't you?
Yeah. It wasn't pretty.
So you get on the top and I timed the gap. So it was 20 seconds exactly. So Valverde's a very good descender. You're also a very good descender. And we could see that you were pushing it, really pushing it on the descent, former mountain biker. You know, was there any nervous moments on the descent or was it all pretty straightforward?
For me, it was pretty okay. I think, I'd done it in training, but you never have the full road in training. So, it felt a bit different. The only thing I knew once you get more towards the city, there's a lot of like manhole covers and a bit of off camber turns. So that was the only part that I was trying to think, okay, what line do I take here? This and that. But in the end it was all right.
And then we get the famous shades throwaway celebration.
Yep,
that was cool.
Yeah, no, it's definitely been done before, but I knew I had to do something different.
It was a really cool, the cameras caught a cool moment after the race when Valverde came up to you and you were talking in Spanish. I think he was saying something like you had big balls on the descent or something like that. I think it was. But I mean, that was the guy's like iconic, you know, he's a bit of class there coming over to talk to you, even though.
Yeah. No, for sure. I mean, it meant a lot to me. And, you know, before I started racing on the road, I always loved watching him race and, you know, his style and everything I always looked up to and appreciated. So, yeah, that was a really nice moment, you know, to finish in front of him on the stage, but also have that bit of camaraderie afterwards.
So that's you now got stage wins in both Tour and Vuelta.
Yeah.
Considering, what is it, you've 3 years of riding Grand Tours and you've already ticked off two of them. So now it's just the Giro to go, I suppose.
Yeah.
Complete the set. So then between Tour and Vuelta, what does, like, do you take time off? Do you just go low kind of training rise? What do you do in that gap?
Just kind of some easier rides, a bit of mountain biking, you know, one week of just kind of disconnecting a bit, but for me, I always rather stay moving, stay in the rhythm a bit. And then after that, more normal training. And I think the other thing is that, you know, I didn't go to the Olympics, so I had that amount of time to just, rest and train. And a lot of other guys, you know, had to make the flight, do the race, different climate, and then travel back. So it was nice to just, be able to take your time.
And then you start by nailing the TT. Not often we can say that. So 12th in the opening TT, possibly your best TT in a kind of race of that standard. How come it was so good?
Probably because there was a climb and then a descent and then only 2K flat. So I went balls out on the climb and then recovered on the descent. And then I barely pushed anything on the flat, but I guess I did enough in the earlier part to just make it in. So
and then you, early on, you go in the breakaway, the Balcon, the Alicante stage, big breakaway. And it looked very, very difficult to get the tactics correct. You know, people were sitting on each other. It was very nervous. Eventually, Storer kind of got away, Sivakov. I think Verona attacked at one point. You got on him. It looked like both of you might get across. Then they chase you down. Verona gets across. And then it seems like your group just stops. It sits up. Nobody wants to ride. How frustrating is that when you're thinking, I could win this stage, and all of a sudden your group just stops riding?
Yeah, definitely a bit frustrating, but you know, that stage was just so chaotic and so much attacking in the second part. Once we were in the break, that it was just kind of one of those stages where it's such a headache to worry about following everything and think about the stage win. So I think for myself, I was more just thinking, okay, let's just follow the guys that are close on GC and try and get some time back on GC. Cause it was just one of those days where it's a mess to try and follow everything. And, you know, if you want it too much, then you follow too much and then you make the move, but then you don't have the legs to win. So, actually that stage I was more or less satisfied just to be back in GC and, to be feeling good again.
And the other great moment for me in the race was Covadonga. Primoz wins with an incredible ride, absolutely sensational, and he's coming back down just past the finish line as you go up to finish second. I think he's shouting you on, or there's a smile or something. That was a pretty cool moment.
Yeah. No, that was really funny. We were in the last, whatever, 100 meters, and he's saying, go, and I'm thinking, oh my god, this is crazy. He's cheering us on, and I don't even know how long he's been finished for, but it must be a long time. But yeah, it was pretty funny. I think everybody in that group was like, what the hell is going on?
Now, you've said before how good it is to ride for somebody like Primoz. I mean, in the Vuelta, he was at another level. Like, what does that feel like when you're riding for the guy who is just almost unstoppable?
Yeah, it feels pretty good. I mean, you know, I think in one way it takes a lot of pressure off the team because you know that he's the strongest guy in the race. So when it comes down to it, you know, he makes the move and he can do it. And you know, I think it also brings everybody else up another level because you're with the best guy and you want to you know, support him the best possible. So I think though we could see how confident he was in the race, and you know, if he wanted to go for it, we tried to control and then he could go for the win, and for sure it doesn't always come that easy.
As a fan watching, it was great to see him doing interviews before and after races sometimes, and like doing an interview in a second or third or fourth language must be so hard. In previous years, he seems quite, I'd say, closed off, whereas this year his interviews were brilliant. He was funny, and you started to get to see the side of Primoz that probably you see but we don't. That was great to see that you said it there. He's the guy at the dinner table who brings people together. It was really nice to see that as a fan, just watching him, you start to see his personality. He really seems like a good guy.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think he grows into that. And for sure the Vuelta is a way more relaxed race than the Tour, for example. And you know, also when he's feeling that good, he can joke around and, you know, really be at ease. So it's nice to see.
He loves a huh at the end of his interview. I don't know if you've seen it, but he loves it in his comments with a huh. So, huh. Right, so you finished eighth on GC, which is quite, looking at your results, is quite symbolic because it's your best ever GC finish in a World Tour race.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes at the Vuelta. So that's, you must be happy with that result considering you're there also to ride for Primoz. So in terms of your own progression, finishing eighth in the Vuelta, how happy are you with that progression over the last couple of years?
Oh, I'm definitely super happy. You know, I definitely would have signed for a top 10 before the race. You know, I didn't have any illusions of going for a podium or anything. I just wanted to do more or less a consistent race and be somewhere in the top 10. You know, I mean, for me, it wasn't perfect either. I had some bad days, some really good days, some okay days. So I think overall though, I was really happy just to put that result together. And that was always more or less of a goal to try and do that in the Vuelta.
Because what people sometimes forget is that you've started relatively late compared to others. You know, I've mentioned earlier, this is just your third season of riding Grand Tours. How hopeful are you that there is more?
Yeah, hopeful for sure. I think, you know, in Grand Tours, I like the race. I like racing for 3 weeks and all the different things that come with that. So, you know, that's where I would like to see the results or the focus fit in. But also there's you know, week long races and maybe those are more suited for me if I'm going for a GC. So maybe the 3 week races are more just going for stages and the week long is for a GC result. But I think for me, it's still early to say because, it can all change in a year or two and depending on how I develop into that.
Basque country, come on. That's got to be your race.
Yeah, it's hard. It's a really hard race.
Yeah.
I think for me, like, the ones that are closest to my heart, I'm motivated for, like Catalunya, the Vuelta. So yeah, I think Basque Country would be up there too. But as long as it's not like super short climbs, then it's okay. But medium length, that's okay for me.
And then you finish off the season in Italy. How difficult is it? You've done the tour, you've done the Vuelta. How hard is it to haul your ass up those last couple of climbs in Italy?
I think from a motivational standpoint, it was okay, actually. I like those races. And you know, I always want to finish on a good note and you know, just give my best in the last weeks of training and feel good about the season. So going in, I felt okay, but in the races, I could notice how tired I was. I had one bullet and it was okay. But then after that, it was, yeah, the fatigue was definitely there.
I'm told that in the first 20K, you know, if it's a good or a bad.
I think that could be a good theory. I mean, yeah, maybe by that point in the season, you're so weathered that you know, because it's also like that in training at that time of year. You go out the door and randomly you have really good legs. And then on a day that you think, oh, I should have good legs today, then you feel like shit. So I think, yeah, that could be a good theory for those one days.
What does your winter training look like? So obviously your first race won't be for a long time. So how does your coach, how do you manage November, December, January?
Right now it's more or less pretty loose, just to kind of get the general riding in. I think, you know, at this point I'm so out of shape that I'd rather just ride my mountain bike and enjoy it and then get the fitness that way. And then when you go to the road bike, you think, okay, at least I have some, something to go off of. And yeah, it's really fun to do this time of year. Just, yeah, riding single track, a lot of fun. But, yeah, there's also a point where you need to ride the road bike and do the work. But, I think more in December, it gets more specific, and, January, of course.
And are you staying in Europe for the whole winter?
I'll go back home, to the US in December. So not for a super long time, just a few weeks, catch up with friends and see family, but, yeah, not as long as I normally do.
And are you one of these cyclists who start running in the winter?
Usually, but I think every year I get a few weeks of running in, and then one day I have, you know, some knee problem or wherever, and then it screws me for a week of riding. So I think, okay, maybe it's not worth it to run, you know. It's nice to do, but yeah, the pros and cons.
Back to the mountain bike.
Yeah, exactly. And we actually did some nice hikes a few weeks ago in Andorra and yeah, up in the mountains. But then whenever I'm hiking, I'm looking at the rocks and thinking, oh fuck, this would be a nice trail to ride on. But,
but is there any other activities you like to do in the off season that you can't do during the season?
Yeah, I think just seeing friends and, you know, just being more relaxed overall, having barbecues, you know, going out to eat at restaurants, seeing, you know, going on little road trips, things like that, but nothing too crazy.
Cool. Well, Seth, thank you for your time tonight. Wishing you all the best for next season, 2022. Hopefully it's a good one for you.
Thank you very much, David. Appreciate it.